The Iran's leader earlier on Tuesday spoke on several important issues regarding the Europeans and the Iran nuclear deal. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said that the deal is now hanging in the balance due to Europe's failure to meet its end of the bargain and that Iran will continue to scale back its commitments. On the UK, he denounced Britain's illegal seizure of an Iranian oil tanker, warning that the act of piracy will not go unanswered. Stay tuned as we discuss Iran's leader's statements regarding important issues surrounding Iran.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has defended Tehran's decision to reduce its commitments under the nuclear deal. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei stressed that Tehran will continue to scale back its obligations no matter what.
حالا که شروع کردیم در مقابل اونها تعهداتمون رو کاهش بدیم اونا طلبگارانه میان جلو آقا چرا شما تعهدتون رو کاهش میدی خب پر روها شما 11 تا تعهد داشتید هیچ عمل نکردید چرا از ما میخواهید که ما به تعهداتمون پابند باشیم حالا ما تازه شروع کردیم به کم کردن تعهدات و این
Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei slammed as an act of piracy Britain's seizure of a tanker with Iranian oil in Gibraltar. The leader stressed that the Islamic Republic will respond to the move in an appropriate time and place.
انگلیس خبیث که واقعا خبث او واضحه دزدی دریایی میکنه کشتی ما رو در واقع میدزدن در واقع این دزدی سال شکل قانونی معمولا رفتارشون اینجوری است جنایت رو میکنن به جنایت خودشون میخوان یه قالب قانونی بدن یه چیزی هم درست میکنن که آره علتش این بوده اما واقع قضیه همینه دزدی دریایی است دزدی دریایی هم میکنن که خب البته انشاءالله جمهوری اسلامی و عناصر مؤمن در جمهوری
Analysts believe the UK is hell-bent on sparking war against Iran.
The intent is to provoke Iran to do something that would then let the US launch its war, US-Israel. And it was under the US request that Britain seize this tanker.
The UK detained the ship last week, accusing the vessel of carrying oil to Syria in violation of European sanctions on Damascus. But Iran has questioned the legal pretexts for the move and has called on Britain to immediately release it. London recently said that it would facilitate the release of the tanker if Tehran provides guarantee that the tanker would not go to Syria. The US and some of its allies have left no stone unturned to harm Iranian interests in the region and beyond. Washington started reimposing crippling sanctions on Iran soon after pulling out of the 2015 nuclear deal. It has also pledged to cut Iran's oil exports to zero as part of the sanctions. Tehran has said that Washington's attempts to block Iran's oil sales will lead nowhere and that the country will export crude as much as it needs and wishes for.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, doctor and political commentator, Dr. Kevin Barrett, joins us from Madison. We have author and political commentator, Nasser al-Omari, who joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. Dr. Barrett, let me first start with you. Iran's leader has made some statements, and one of the things that he looked at is the issue of the British military's seizure of the Iranian ship, of this oil tanker by the name of Grace One, which happened off the coast of Gibraltar. Now, in terms of what he has said, and I'm going to quote him, he said that the wicked Britain commits an act of maritime piracy and steals our ship. They perpetrated a crime and made it look legal. Why did the UK, you think, go ahead with this act, in which it is said that it was based on the directions of the US?
Well, the Supreme Leader of Iran is right in comparing this illegal ship seizure to acts of piracy. And in fact, piracy is really defined as lawless seizure of property on the high seas. And it's no accident that it's the British who are continuing this kind of tradition because they built their empire on piracy. Francis Drake is the name that everybody remembers as the man who built the British Navy, which ended up taking over the world for the British Empire. And all of that was built on piracy. The British preyed on the shipping of the Spanish and Portuguese, who were the biggest world empire at that time. Buckminster Fuller has said that the Western world takeover of the last couple of centuries was all built on piracy. He calls the Western imperialist masters of the world the sea pirates who took over the world. So pirates have a way of going back to their habits of piracy, even in a world in which supposedly international law has replaced the law of the jungle on the high seas. And today, the law of the jungle is the law that's being imposed by the Zionist American Empire, or the Anglo-Zionist Empire, whatever you want to call it, this empire whose heart is the financial center in New York, in London, and in Tel Aviv. This empire is destroying international law. The false flag event of September 11th was specifically designed to unleash the power of this empire so that it would no longer have to even give lip service to international law. And now, as they press their Donald Trump war on Iran, shredding the international agreements, the nuclear deal, the JCPOA, and shredding and flouting international law, they continue this tradition of piracy and criminality on which this whole empire was built.
Dr. Omari, this was a rather provocative act coming from the UK. Did it surprise you? And of course, it changes things when it is said that it was based on the direction of the U.S. And in particular, when you take a look at what Iran's President Hassan Rouhani has said, he said that to the UK, and I'm going to quote him, that you are the ones that are initiating insecurity in this region, and it will come to, and you will come to realize that there are going to be consequences of this in the future.
Yeah, you know, it's really hard to understand this in terms of in legal terms. If the British would tell you that they were implementing European Union sanctions on the Syrian regime, so that's how they would justify their action. And you can go back in into the history of this conflict between Iran and the West, and you could point fingers as far as back when the United States intervened in Iran and installed their own puppets. So there's really a lot of blame to go around, and you can point to what the United States is doing, against the Palestinians and all the grievances in the region. The problem today, I think, is that the Iranian people are suffering tremendously under these sanctions. And I'm sure the Supreme Leader is concerned about the amount of suffering. And the Iranian people do not deserve to be put under these sanctions. So the search for a solution, regardless of who is the aggressor, and I'm not saying there is no aggressor, but there has to be a solution to this. On the one hand, you have the United States, who are saying we want to come to the negotiation table, and you have Mr. Zarif saying I want to sit and talk. So everybody is talking about peace and sitting and negotiating. However, the region is inching closer and closer to military confrontation. So I believe there's a great deal of room for diplomacy. I think it's in the interest of Iran and the United States and Europe to avoid this war. But at the same time, every time I look, I see a region that is coming closer and closer to war when everybody is talking peace. So it drives you crazy to think that that the West is about to launch a war against Iran. But I'm sorry to say, this is what we are seeing day after day.
Do you see that, as our guest there in New York stated, Dr. Barrett?
Well, yes, obviously the Trump administration is heavily influenced, if not controlled, by forces that really do seek a war on Iran, presumably because it could explode and become a big regional war that would offer the Likudnik extremist Zionists the excuse to finish the ethnic cleansing of Palestine by massacring and expelling the remaining non-Jewish residents of historic Palestine. The late Alan Hart, the former lead BBC correspondent for the Middle East and a personal friend of Golda Meir and Yasser Arafat, a back-channel peace negotiator who dealt with U.S. presidents, famously warned in his great book, The Zionism Trilogy, that this was the endgame of the Likudnik extremists. They faced what they see as a demographic threat from the non-Jewish people in historic Palestine, and essentially they have to kill and expel those people in order to purify their ethnic supremacist state, according to their ideology, and to continue to expand the borders of that state. So they seek a big regional war for that purpose. That these people were indeed in the forefront of the group that orchestrated the September 11th false flag operation, which was designed, as General Clark told us, to take out 7 countries in 5 years, and the 7th and most important country on that list was Iran. So we should make no mistake about these people and their designs. They are looking for war in the region, and a bigger war will serve their purposes better than a smaller one. And let's not forget that Donald Trump is the creature of the kosher Nostra, some call it, which is the organized crime syndicate that dominates the West. It used to be run by Meyer Lansky. Now it's probably dominated by the so-called Russian mafia, which is really the Israeli-Russian mafia. These people, people like Sheldon Adelson, people of that ilk, including Trump's own son-in-law, Jared Kushner, whose father did time in federal prison. He's a mobster, and Trump's got this mobster overseeing his Mideast policy, and Trump is under the thumb of Bibi Netanyahu, who wants that war. So even though there are sane people in the U.S. foreign policy apparatus who realize that a war with Iran would be disastrous for the United States, there are also powerful people who understand that if they want to finish the ethnic cleansing of Palestine and to try to take down the last really independent country in the region that stands with the Palestinians, they want a war with Iran. So those people exist, and they have to be dealt with.
Dr. Omari, you talk about how the U.S. And Iran are inching closer towards a war, and of course their allies, in particular Israel, and we could also mention Saudi Arabia, to be right behind it, if not directly engaged in this, perhaps. Something very interesting happened yesterday. The meeting that took place at EU headquarters in Brussels, when there was a press conference by the EU foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, she said that there has not been significant non-compliance by Iran, and that the other parties to this deal feel that that's not anything to worry about. Yet it is that very same premise of which the U.S. is sounding the alarm, saying, no, Iran is beyond, it's out of control, it's enriching uranium to the point that it's going after the nuclear bomb. This false premise, do you think that's enough for the world to actually gather behind the U.S. and its allies if they want to wage a war against Iran? Because it doesn't seem like it has that many buyers anymore.
No, I don't think the United States is, or even Israel, is eager to attack Iran, because they know that this is not going to be a piece of cake. This is not a small country. This is a real country. This is not going to be a short war, as Mr. Trump said. He said it's going to be short. It's not going to be short. The invasion of Iraq, I would say the United States hasn't recovered from the invasion of Iraq. I think what Mr. Trump and his allies are counting on is internal fracture of Iran. They do not want to attack Iran. They believe that these sanctions will lead to a revolution within Iran, and then they can come in and probably divide the country or impose whatever they wish to impose on the Iranian people. I doubt that even the Saudis, who understand that, a faction like Al-Houthi has been fighting them for, 4 years. So imagine if you have to deal with a country like Iran and you have to defend your borders. So I disagree with your honorable guest. I don't think they're eager for a war. However, that doesn't discount their calculation of destroying the Iranian regime from within. This is really their plan. However, when the Iranian leaders say, we are not going to sit still, we're going to fight back. If we don't sell oil, nobody else is going to sell oil. What the Iranians are saying is that this is not going to be an internal war. We are going to fight back, and everybody will have to pay a price. And that is why you have the stalemate right now, where the Trump administration really doesn't know what to do with Iran at this point.
Well, Dr. Barrett, the message is coming from the U.S., especially since Iran decided to scale back on its nuclear commitments, has been, especially after Iran even downed that U.S. drone that intruded into Iranian airspace, has been more conciliatory, and it's been more of let's talk. We keep hearing about the U.S. wanting to talk to Iran. And even today, the U.S. President Donald Trump said that progress has been made with regards to Iran, offering no idea of what that progress is during a cabinet meeting. And Mike Pompeo, the U.S. Secretary of State, saying that it was prepared to negotiate with Iran and its missile program. What reading do you make on these statements coming from the U.S.?
Well, I should clarify that I wasn't saying that the U.S. leadership wants a war with Iran. I think the U.S. leadership knows that it would be disastrous for American interests and for their own political interests. It's a relatively small and who knows how marginalized group that is actually seeking that war. The crazies in the basement, perhaps, and maybe not even all of the B team really wants a war. But yeah, I think that they are trying to get regime change one way or another. The Obama administration thought they could get regime change through soft power and propaganda and so on by playing nice on the outside and being nasty beneath the surface. So yeah, I agree. That's the strategy. And I think the Iranian government is doing a good job of showing that it won't be pushed around and it's not about to topple over. Bolton promised that regime change would happen before the last anniversary of the revolution. It certainly didn't happen. And the more pressure they put on Iran, the more the Iranian people are tending to rally behind their leadership. So I think that the Americans perhaps, well, it depends which Americans we're talking about, but Trump himself clearly doesn't want a war. He wants some kind of deal that will lavish honor upon his dishonorable name. Whether that's possible, though, is another question, because there's really not that much room to renegotiate the nuclear deal. Iran obviously isn't going to be giving up its rockets. Maybe if the U.S. totally pulled out of the region and stopped arming the Saudis to the teeth, then Iran might be able to work out some kind of a general deal for the region. But that's a far cry from renegotiating the nuclear deal. That's the problem here, is that Trump has no idea what's really in that deal. He just hates it because Obama negotiated it. And so he has this empty notion that there's something that could be done to fix it when there isn't. And how that problem can be gotten around, I don't really know. But since it's basically the product of one man's ignorance, maybe the combination of the people around him and people in Iran can find some way to at least put the dampers on this dangerous series of escalations before it does turn into something much uglier.
Why do you think, Dr. Amari, that Donald Trump does not just come back to the nuclear deal? What would, at this point, given the rise in tensions and how close this crisis has come in terms of it getting out of control and the possibilities still exist, why doesn't Trump, despite the fact that leaks have come out saying that he left the nuclear deal for the fact that it was Obama's deal, why doesn't he just come back to the deal? And that is something that Iran has said. Of course, Iran has also asked for damages in compensation to happen since the U.S. pulled out of the deal.
Well, I find it very difficult for Mr. Trump, who withdrew from this nuclear agreement based on 12 things that Iran was doing. I doubt that he's going to rejoin the agreement and say, well, sorry, let's just go back. That's not going to happen. Diplomatically, though, it will probably wind up being resolved in just this fashion. They will have to go back to the negotiation table. And Mr. Trump is welcoming the negotiating table at this point, and the Iranian leadership has made it clear that if they're treated respectfully, if the Iranian people are treated respectfully, then they're willing to sit and talk. But I would say that it's really, I hate to see this this whole conflict being reduced to a whim by President Trump. The Iranian-American conflict is real. There's a problem in the region, and it ranges from the Palestinian cause, Israel, and there is terrorism, and there is Syria that is in deep trouble. So there are real problems, and this is not just President Trump or the Supreme Leader, competing for war. There are real problems, and I think that the Iranian leadership is responsible enough to sit and talk about Yemen, to talk about Syria, a war which is winding down anyway, Iraq, which has its own government. So I think that despite all of this rhetoric, I think that the Iranian leadership and Mr. Trump see a clear way to a negotiating solution to this. I don't think that they view war as the solution, because it will not solve any of the existing problems. So I believe that this will wind up being negotiated soon, I hope. I think Mr. Trump is eager to have that debate with the Iranians.
Very well. We're going to unfortunately have to end it there. Author and political commentator Dr. Kevin Barrett spoke to us from Madison, and author and political commentator Dr. Nasser Al-Omari spoke to us from New York. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mika Batawe and the team here in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye. Until next time.